digital learning right now is viewed as an adjunct. It's like a whiteboard in a computer, you know, in the classroom. You pay for it out of a separate fund. It's not at the core of learning for a reason. Monopolies don't want to have direct competition.
Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida. What is at the absolute top of your education reform list?
Applying digital learning as a transformative tool to disrupt the public education system to make it more child-centered, more customized, more robust, more diverse,
and that
more
would be
exciting.
Digital in traditional schools and new schools, it's a game changer.
In my mind, if you eliminate the barriers of entry for a group of math teachers in Utah that have a suite of Algebra 1, Algebra 2, geometry courses that they could sell to a school district in Florida where they share the resources that come for that child in a way that allows the teacher in the classroom and they to share the resources, we could see an explosion of learning.
And that would, I assume it would up test scores, or not even test scores, but knowledge, and it would decrease costs,
it's scalable, yeah. It's higher quality, you could benchmark it to world-class kind of standards and expectations, and it would be a way that, instead of saying, you get your digital learning only if you're homeschooled, or you know, you only can get it private. This would be a way to create a more hybrid form of education, which I think will create higher learning. The whole objective ought to be one thing isn't going to do this, but I think that one would be the one that would most quickly transform the system and all the resistors to a real focus on student learning.
What is the biggest obstacle to focusing either on student learning or implementing digital learning?
Digital learning right now is viewed as an adjunct. It's like a whiteboard in a computer, you know, in the classroom. You pay for it out of a separate fund. It's not at the core of learning. It's not viewed as a core issue of learning. It's viewed as a peripheral.
Right.
And as such, it'll always have the challenges of funding. And it's done that way for a reason. Monopolies don't want to have direct competition. Imagine a repository of 1,000 quality courses that moms and dads and teachers could access, and imagine how you share the pricing of that, depending on where you are and how it's done in each community, each district.
Oh, it can't be done, right? There's no model for that anywhere online or in any school.
It exists on the margins. It exists as everything exists. I mean, this is what reason teaches us, what you all teach us, which is that markets work. Monopolies resist that. And so if if you're a high school and you get $7,000 per student, say, a kid in Florida, that's about right. That's 1/6, you have 6 credits. You would divide 7,000 by 6, you'd get $1,300 or something like that. $1,300 for that geometry class split between the providers of the content and the classroom teacher and the administration around that teacher could easily be handled, and it would create higher quality, huge scale opportunities where you could lower costs. The other thing I'd say is any reform that's worth its salt right now has to recognize that we're in a decade-long flat per student spending. So there are fantastic charter schools in the big urban areas, you know, where you're getting $20,000 per student, and those children are going to have a great education, particularly compared to what the alternatives are. But it's not transformative if it can't be applied at the national average of student funding, because that's where the most propulsive kind of changes will take place. So anything that provides higher quality at lower cost, just as it is in the real world, we'll have great success in education.
What's your time frame for the Berlin Wall of the education monopoly being, just torn down by the inmates?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if it'll be a dramatic wall crashing, because we have Eastern Europe and Eastern Germany was one entity. Mm-hmm. We have thousands of little monopolies, mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different in that regard. But I do think that the cracks are already starting to happen, that there is a tipping point that's beginning, not for the ultimate transform kind of system that's completely child-centered, where money goes with the child and you have a myriad of public and private options. But we're making good progress on a variety of different things, accountability, School choice is expanding in most places. Teacher evaluation and how you pay teachers, all that stuff is happening. So it may not be the one big explosion where we all say, I guess it's done now.
What is next for you?
Well, what's next for me is to build on this. This foundation's 3 years old, and this conference is 2 times bigger than last year and 4 times bigger than the year before. And I like the fact that we've become a meeting place, a gathering place for a broad spectrum of people that have diverse views but are really focused on education reform. I want to be a catalyst to try to find ways for, in a world with great ideological fights to be fought, and I'll be part of that. I mean, there are big fights to be fought. I'd like for education to be a place where ideology doesn't drive the decisions, but
does inform the debate.
Informs the debate and but is focused. I mean, I think a liberal could support systemic change.
Sure.
School choice in the 60s was a creature of the left, not of the right.
Right.
It makes no sense for me to think that you have the left supporting an unsustainable system and the right not focusing on rising student achievement as a high priority, but just kind of focusing on local control being the dominant feature. We need to get the debate beyond that, and I hope to play a role in that.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here.